This podcast is produced by KPP Financial Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, June 20th edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above average investor. And our job is to help you make the best possible money choices that are available to you, whether that's investing correctly, saving properly, spending most efficiently, or anything else along the lines. There can be many money issues that arise throughout your life, and we want to be a sounding board for you to bounce ideas off of and get a little perspective on various aspects of your money life. Now, Invest Talk is more than a Q&A program, and although we welcome your questions, of course, no matter whether you're a beginner or investor, we're here to bring you some useful facts and information that offer hopefully some perspective to help you make the best possible choices. Now today we're going to spend a few minutes during the hour talking about the shape and contents of the ideal retirement portfolio. And an ideal plan is one that would meet the retiree's financial needs until death. So we're going to discuss, what does an ideal retirement portfolio look like? It's one of our main talking points today. And of course, I welcome your call about any money topics as usual. So we'll get to the phones in a moment or two, but the lines are open now, so you can get your call in as soon as possible. Now, many of our listeners are just starting out or going through the first phase of learning how to invest, and they may not be even sure they're ready or that they are ready to dive in or want to dive in. You know, investing can be scary, especially if you're a younger generation scared by the close-up view of the financial crisis that we saw coming up on a decade ago. But not investing is even a scarier proposition if you understand the math. And a lot of, I think, millennials are starting to embrace that fact. Now, first, you need investment growth to lift your retirement prospects. And many people want to be able to afford the same lifestyle in their elder years as they had in their younger days. And you need to do that by relying on savings alone, not just salary, right? Now, the more you put in today, the much more you'll have later down the road, because time value of money and the growth of investment returns, the compounding returns of investment. So think about this. The S&P 500 has an average of an 11% annual return since 1966. Now, obviously, nothing is guaranteed, so you may not get 11%. But suppose you put $10,000 into a fund with a mix of stocks, bonds, alternative assets, a lot of things that we invest for our clients at KPP. Now, in 20 years, your original $10,000 investment will be worth more than $32,000, assuming you get 6% return annually. It'll be worth $12,200 in a savings account if you earn 1% return. But if you put it in just a savings account, basically cash, that $10,000 will only be worth $10,020 if you earn the 0.01% that they're yielding now. So don't worry about the short-term dips in the market. Embrace the math. Embrace the downturns in the market. It's difficult to time the market, so know if there is a decline, it's likely going to bounce back eventually. And over time, being in the market pays off more than staying out. So just being a conscious investor, and when I say conscious, I mean value conscious, is really what I'm talking about. And that tends to being a value investor outperforms over time by about 3 or 4% from being a growth investor. That's why we are value investors, and when the market goes down, we get excited. We like to find those values. We're able to find those values. And that's what our ultimate goal for you on Invest Talk is to learn how to find those values as well. Now, it takes time, it takes effort, it takes data, it takes expertise, discipline, all the things that, you know, we as professionals pay for and get over time by experience, but you can do it as well. Now, I'll be straight up. Invest Talk is a learning experience for a lot of people. And some of you will be able to execute on all the things that are needed to create a good portfolio, create a good plan based on listening to the show and doing other things that will help you learn how to make the best decision. And that's some of you. But the vast majority of you probably won't have the time or the data or the discipline to make the best decisions, and that's usually when our listeners call our office up and meet with Steve or meet with me, and we figure out how to create a plan for them. And that's the reality of it. You know, we've been doing this show for 20 plus years, and we've seen it. We've seen it time and time again. So understand that this takes a lot of work. And you can do it. You really can. But it's not something you're going to learn in a month or even a year. And you're not going to learn it by just listening to the show. You're not going to just get the data that you need from MarketWatch or Yahoo Finance. You're going to have to create your own system based on your own needs and time available and expertise and strategy that you want to deploy. And hopefully we are a piece to that puzzle. But the puzzle, there's a lot of pieces to this puzzle. So hopefully we can be a great resource for you to keep you moving along and putting those puzzle pieces together. If not, that's what we do for clients, right? We put those puzzle pieces together. Now, do you have questions about reducing the risk of investing? Our listener line is 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime line, and we are live 4 to 5 Pacific time. So let's take this question that came in before today's program.
Hey, Steve. I've been listening to your podcast for a while now. I'm getting ready to roll over a 401k, and I want to put some of it into sector ETFs. And it might have been on your show, but on one of the podcasts I listened to, somebody suggested that it needs to have a certain amount of volume. I think they said 500,000 shares a day is what you needed to have liquidity. If this is a long-term investment, like Vanguard Sector ETFs is what I'm thinking about, like how big a concern is that? And also, is market cap a concern? Don't know much about ETFs and just getting into it, and appreciate your answer. Thank you.
Okay. So he's looking to diversify his portfolio by using sector ETFs. And I think I talked about it last week about having a good volume on a particular ETF to make sure it's liquid enough. Now, if it is a long-term holding, probably not that big of an issue. The issuer is important as well. If you're using Vanguard, I don't think they're going anywhere, so that's fine as well. So, you know, that's a general rule, but it's also not hard and fast either, just like any investment rule. So understand that. So I wouldn't be too tied to that 500,000 mark, but it's a good number to kind of look at. It's, especially when you're looking at sector ETFs, they're going to have less interest than an overall broad index, and so volume will probably be less. But like I said, the issuer is probably more important than that overall volume. Understand the risk. Make sure you understand the risks if you're going to do sector ETFs. It's something where in some markets, certain sectors are great, and in others, not so hot, right? In the market so far this year, oil's been terrible, and technology's been great, but guarantee in the near future, you'll probably have a market where it's the opposite. So diversification is important, and understand that you'll have some sectors that will ebb while others flow. And you have to be prepared for that. In a bear market, most sectors go down. So that's not going to prevent you from losses, but diversification will be helpful. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. Here's some words of wisdom from legendary investor and author Benjamin Graham. The individual investor should act consistently as an investor and not as a speculator. And that's our goal here each and every day for you on InvestTalk, is to become an investor. Not chasing returns, not listening to Fast Money on CNBC, which is a terrible thing to watch. But it's something that you have to learn over time, is how to become an investor as opposed to a speculator. And most new investors are speculators right off the bat because they don't know the difference. So do you know the difference? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on the show live today or after hours. You can leave your message. We'll answer it tomorrow. Now, what does an ideal retirement portfolio look like? I'm going to talk about it in abstract because everyone's situation is a little bit different, and hopefully this will give you some guidance on how to think about yours leading up to retirement and in retirement as well. And then I really want to touch on a very interesting remark from Chicago Fed President Charles Evans. And this is a statement about inflation and the role technology is playing in inflation. And it is something I've been talking about kind of internally at KPP and with friends over the past, God knows how many years, 5, 10 plus years. And the fact that they're finally waking up to the impact that technology has on inflation is shocking in one sense and embarrassing in another, because it's taken them so long. So I'm going to get to that and what that and how you should think about that and why the Fed has been so off base because of the overlooking of impact of technology. Then, do you need to pay off your mortgage before you retire? Steve and I always advocate that you do, but there are some pros and cons. And I'm going to talk about what those are, and everyone's situation is always a little bit different, so there's no hard and fast rule, but I'll give you some general guidelines for that. And then Whole Foods had a town hall following the Amazon acquisition with their employees, and I'm going to give you some takeaways from that and what statements were made there that will give you some indication of how this merger will take place and the impact it will have on the retail and grocery space overall. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278, so you get through and ask your question. Now, let's take a look at the market today. We had the Dow down 61, the S&P down 16, the NASDAQ was down about 51 points. Once again, NASDAQ was weak, S&P was weak overall. I think we are very close to this summer peak. I think we might have had it two Fridays ago. And really, the NASDAQ hasn't come close to recovering that move. And I think we're ready. Feds raised three times, kind of tightening liquidity overall. And I think we're ready for this pullback. It might take a few more weeks, but the weakness is here, I think. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. I'm glad you are investing this hour with us. Let's hear your voice. Our anytime line is open at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. What can I do for you?
I just wanted to go back and revisit like what you were just talking about a few minutes ago regarding the Amazon and Whole Foods takeover.
Okay.
And I had touched upon this not terribly long ago. I hold a position currently in Rite Aid, which had that pending merger. Whether it's still in balance or up in the air is still unclear. But
I think it's pretty clear. If something is trading so much farther, because they announced it was going to be around, what, $8.50 a share, the acquisition?
I think it originally, and then they reduced it between $6.50 and $7.
Okay, and then it traded quickly down there, and now it's at $3.27 a share.
Right. It had a pretty decent move yesterday, but I was wondering, like, with the FTC attempting to prevent this to happen, how is it that an Amazon-Whole Foods merger is acceptable where they would not interfere with something like that, but this Rite Aid ordeal doesn't work for them? They want to block that from happening?
Well, you're first off, you're talking about two different types of mergers. Rite Aid and was it Walgreens, was it?
Yes.
You know, they're in the same space and they're in the same category, and there's not a lot of other drug stores besides them, at least of that size. And so that's one of the issues, where Amazon and Whole Foods, those are two very different companies. There's still a lot of other types of grocery stores out there. So it doesn't change the size of the market share overall in the grocery space, because Amazon's coming with a very low percentage of that space as it is. So it's two very different types of mergers.
So I've held on to it for a while, and I feel like almost slightly irresponsible if I dump Rite Aid and then for whatever reason it ends up happening and I could end up profiting from it. I mean, I can dump it. I'm kind of contemplating whether to hold on to it any longer.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said last time in the call, to me it looks like Rite Aid's a bankruptcy candidate. If you just look at the level of debt that they have and the lack of earnings that they have, it's a $3.5 billion market cap with an enterprise value of 10.5. So you're talking about a 2x leverage. I mean, about 20x leverage. I apologize. And their negative cash flow is not getting better. I just don't see a way out for Rite Aid unless this deal goes through. But to me, if I'm Walgreens, I rather let it go bankrupt and buy its assets on pennies on the dollar once they do go bankrupt, instead of having to swallow $10.5 billion of enterprise value, actually even more than that if it's back up at $7 a share. So I think it's a lost cause. I mean, I don't know that much, frankly, about the Rite Aid and Walgreens deal. So I could uncover something in researching that might tell me that I think it could take place. But what's telling me it's not going to take place is the price. The market's telling you it's not going to take place because it's now trading at half of that agreed upon price. And if the market had any faith in that merger happening, it would be much, much closer to that deal price. And so what I'm saying is I would dump it and move on, because I think there's very little chance that merger will actually go through. And I think there's a decent chance Rite Aid will probably go bankrupt in the next few years.
All right. Thank you for clearing it up for me.
No problem, James. Thanks for calling. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, what does an ideal retirement portfolio look like? Now, in simple terms, an ideal plan is one that meets the retiree's financial needs until death, right? That's your ultimate goal with your savings, is I want this money to sustain me past working life and until I pass away. Now, some people might have goals beyond that, like leaving money to their kids or grandkids, leaving it in a generational trust, something like that. But that's more of the minority. Now, first off, it's vitally important to have at least a portion of your retirement savings growing faster than the rate of inflation. So it will allow you to increase your purchasing power over time. Now the big question is, what is the best asset for that? Well, data from Ibbotson Associates clearly shows stocks by far the best return asset class out there. Since 1926, average about 10% growth per year. Bonds about half that, and cash is a little bit lower than that. You know, talking about money market accounts. You know, today's money market accounts of yielding next to nothing are rare. Used to yield 5, 6, 7%. I don't know if you knew that. But after the break, we'll get to this a little bit more. What does that mean for you? Now, do you know how much risk you're taking right now with your retirement portfolio? Take the first step to find out. Take the test. It's our free risk analysis tool. It's right there for free on investtalk.com. And then we can take your current portfolio and make sure you're taking the proper risk. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, a question about your 401k. You know, when you change employers, Steve says you have many choices to make. Leave it to the old employer's 401k plan, roll over to the new employer, roll over and move the assets to an IRA, or cash out the proceeds. And unfortunately, that last one is what many people choose. Cash out the proceeds and pay taxes and the 10% penalty fee. That's the worst choice. But even when you make the smarter choice, there are details to get right. And one of the most important services that KPP can perform, so why not get in touch with a 401k rollover expert at KPP Financial? If you have any questions about your 401k rollover, just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. Now let's continue with the podcast. This is Invest Talk, and we're glad to hear on this Tuesday, June 20th, financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein is ready for your money question right now. On any money topic, our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Kevin in Wisconsin. How you doing, Kevin?
How you doing today?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Yes. First off, I love this show. Listen to a podcast every day. I had a question about saving for my son's college education. He's turning five.
Okay.
I was looking at the 529 plans, mm-hmm. but I heard if he doesn't go to college that, you know, you can pay a fee or a penalty for it. So would it be smarter to just put that money in the index fund and start saving that way, or would you recommend I go to 529?
Well, you can take that money, so say that he doesn't go to college, but you want to, you can redirect that to a direct family member, like a cousin or a stepchild or even your parents, your wife who wants to go to school. So there are some rules around that allows you to change the beneficiary. So there's some flexibility if he doesn't go to college. So how much are you going to save a year, would you say?
I'm looking at maybe saving between $2,000 and $5,000, depending on how much I can come up with extra.
Okay. There is such thing as called, I believe it's Coverdale. I think they changed the name to Keogh, Coverdale. And those are a little more flexible. Say he wants to go to a trade school. Right, maybe he wants to be a barber. He wants to cut hair. Maybe he wants to be, he wants to go to tech school to become a programmer or something, right? That gives it a little more flexibility there, but you can't put in as much. So there are different factors that come into play. You could also just open up an IRA and have him be the beneficiary. There are different ways that you can go about it. But I think 529s are probably the best because you can put the most in. Now, the flexibility of their investments is not great. We use TD Ameritrade's platform, and they use the Nebraska plan because every state is a little bit different. So it's really up to you. But I would go with a 529 plan myself because you think he won't go to college?
It's hard to tell. They're so young at this age. I want them to go to college, though.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can put up to, let's see, I think it's like $14,000 a year.
Okay.
That's kind of a lot, you know. So.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, I would go with that. And then if he doesn't go to college, I mean, That's a nice. You could pay some sort of taxes and fees, but it's the taxes you probably would have paid anyway, and the fee will probably be, I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head. I have to look it up, but it's, I don't think it's more than 10%. So, and you could always change the beneficiary to your nephew or something, right?
Okay.
If you wanted to.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
No problem, Kevin. Thanks for calling.
I love the show. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Let's go to Anthony in Hayward. How you doing, Anthony?
Good. Hey, Justin. I had a stock here. It's called CTL, ticker symbol for CenturyLink.
Yep.
Took a little bit of a hit last week. Something about a billing scam, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, all sorts of lawsuits and something. Looks like it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So wanted to have your take on it to see if is it a value stock at this point or still a little bit too early? And overall, what's your feel of the company?
Okay. CenturyLink. This is a telecom company. And from what I remember, it operates telecom communication company in the U.S., provides broadband, voice, and wireless services to consumers and businesses across the country. Aren't they in kind of rural areas?
Not too sure about that. I'm really looking at it from a dividend and long term, maybe some, you know,
well,
like in my utilities portfolio.
Yeah, and you're looking at that 8% yield, correct?
Yes.
And I would say I would not be expecting that. Okay. First off, if you look at its payout ratio, it's about 212%. Its cash dividend payout ratio is a lot more attractive at 107%, but still, they're paying out more than their cash flow, right? And one of the issues, however, is their cash flow is declining. Cash flow not from operations in March 2013 was almost $6 billion. Now it's at $4.24 billion and continues to trend down. So it's not like, oh, their business position is getting better. It's actually getting worse. And their financial leverage is, while right now is not dramatically high, it does continue to slowly rise, meaning they're adding more and more debt. And if interest rates rise, that's certainly going to become more of a burden on their ability to pay that dividend, right? So this is likely a name that, while maybe not in the near term they're going to cut their dividend, this isn't a long-term buy and hold, oh, I'm going to get 8%. I would say maybe 4% longer term is maybe more realistic. But my question is, what's wrong with their business? Why is their operating cash flow declining? I need to understand that to understand where is the bottom, right? Because their free cash flow was $3.1 billion in 2012. Trailing 12 months, we're down to a billion. They've lost two-thirds of their free cash flow in 4-5 years. Why is that? I really need to understand that. So to me, this is a very high-risk name, a very high-risk dividend play. I don't like it. I don't like the trend. I don't like the scam part of their bit. You know, scam controversy. That's from what I remember. It was something similar to what Wells Fargo did by opening accounts and churning fees and all that. That certainly could hit their business from a cash flow perspective and a PR as well. So, and how much is that? I don't know. And there could be massive lawsuits. To me, this is just not a name I like.
How do you feel about this communication space? The risk with CenturyLink, do you feel it's more of this company specific or just in this communication space where it's getting a bit more riskier?
I think in general it's riskier, and the reason is because now kind of the whole country is connected both through broadband and through wireless, right? And you're seeing that right now as the wireless space competition is heating up. And on the fixed line broadband space, which is where CenturyLink operates, you're having Google Fiber coming in. You're having kind of these tech companies coming in that are doing things faster, at faster speeds, cheaper prices, bundling it with current tech services. And that puts a lot of pressure on these names. So in general, I'm not a big fan of the space, to be honest with you. So that makes it double bad for CenturyLink. I just don't like it at all.
Fair enough. Hey, thank you so much. Appreciate it, Jeff.
No problem, Anthony. Thanks for calling. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 15 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to give us a call, do it ASAP. So I talked before the break a little bit about what the ideal plan is and how you for retirement and how you need a growth component to keep up with inflation and how stocks are the best performer over the long, long term. Now, as you get closer to retirement and into retirement, you're certainly going to have a capital preservation bent. You're going to focus more on income than you are on growth of the principal. But in all likelihood, you still need a little bit of both. And that's why our Balanced Income Program is our most popular program for our clients, because it works for near retirees, current retirees, and it has a little bit of both. Little dividend paying stocks and corporate bonds as well. So if you're in your 40s and 50s, you need to probably start moving some of your holdings into more conservative sectors like corporate bonds, preferred stocks, more moderate risk investments. And then when you're in retirement, you need adequate safety. Maybe you need some of your investments in CDs and super conservative assets. And as you get closer into your 80s and 90s, you probably need that even more. But you don't want it to be exclusively guaranteed instruments because you lack the upside of keeping up with inflation. What happens if you're locked into fixed income at 4 or 5% return and then all of a sudden inflation picks up dramatically to 10, 15, 20%, which I know it doesn't seem like it could happen. But it happened in the 70s. You need to have some exposure to the equity markets, most likely. Just a matter of how much. So most people would define an ideal retirement portfolio, once again, as with the right mix to help you live relatively comfortably and provide for any expenses that arise along the way for retirement. So in general, most young retirement savers will focus their portfolio either mostly or completely on growth until they reach their 40s or 50s, at which time objectives start to shift towards income a little bit and lower risk. But different investors also have different risk tolerances, and this is important as well. And this is why we start with a risk tolerance questionnaire for clients and potential clients. Because even if you're young and you're not able to handle volatility, you probably shouldn't be taking as much risk as most young people. And if you're in retirement and you have enough money and you live conservatively and you want to leave a lot to your kids, maybe you should be taking more risk. So everyone's situation is a little bit different. But understanding that progression of where you probably should be and then adjusting according to your risk tolerance is important. And that's kind of what we do for our clients. Let's go to Wendy in Chino Hills.
Hey, Justine, how are you?
I'm doing great. Home of the Ball Brothers. How are you doing?
Good, good. I have three questions today. Two of them are regarding the stock. First one is DLTH.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to buy it, so I want to have some thoughts on that. I mean, you like to share some thoughts on that one.
Okay.
It's a good buying point at this time.
Okay.
And the second one is MOMO. That one is I'm holding it and trying to see if, like, in the short term, there's going to be a pop-up, like, recently. And the third question is regarding – I'm just started to build up my portfolio, and you always said you have to have a lot of stocks, right? I mean, different sectors regarding the stock. So I want to ask you, like, what is, like, a popular growth sector for, like, right now, like a trend thing? Like, I know technology was good, but I don't know if that's going to last. So I want to add, like, different sectors. Can you give me some insights on those?
Okay.
And more. How many, like, stocks should I have in one of the portfolio, just for the stock sector?
All right. Well, that's a lot of questions. We only go with one, but I'm going to try to answer as many as I can quickly. The last one's easy. We like at least 25 to 30 different positions. If you go over 40, you're probably too diversified. So somewhere in that 25 to 40 range is where you need to be, most likely. 20 at the bare minimum. Now let's go into Duluth Holdings. They market clothing, tools, and accessories for contractors and serious do-it-yourselfers. Interesting. So in the retail space, so they have different brands like Alaskan Hard Gear. Interesting. Are this kind of like outdoor clothes? What do they make?
For like general contractors.
Oh, for
a lot
general.
Of them. For like for the people who are working. To do the job, like
gotcha.
Some of
okay.
them, like their shirt they design is longer to cover their mm-hmm. butt.
Gotcha.
Know,
so I gotcha. So they IPO'd at 12 last. Looks like end of 2015, and rallied all the way up to the mid almost $40 a share. Now it's way down to $17.45. To me, it's still not a good value here. Its operating mm-hmm. earnings is only 5.5. To me, this needs to get down to $10 at least.
Okay.
Yeah, $10 a share. It's not quite there yet. Now, Momo is another stock I'd have to get into. Don't have time for that. You can call back maybe tomorrow, and I can answer that. I don't want to eat up too much time. What sector to get into? What growth sector? You know, or we're not fans of growth side of the market, you know, so I can't. Typical growth sector would be like biotech, right? Not an area I like, you know. I don't like biotech right now because of the scrutiny on drug prices, et cetera. Technically, it looks weak. Valuations are poor. I don't like that area of the marketplace either. Overall, my favorite sector of the market would probably be consumer staples.
Okay.
I know it's not exciting, but that's probably my favorite sector of the market today.
What can you give me like a name for that sector? Because I'm not familiar with it.
Okay.
So I don't know what
well, if you're looking at one of those popular ETFs in that space would be XLP. So I would look at maybe the components of XLP and try to find some of your favorite names there.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Wendy.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. We'd love to hear from you before the hour is up. 888-99-CHART is the number. Give us a call as soon as possible. We only have about 7 minutes left. Once again, that's 888-992-4278. Let's go to Robert in Pleasanton.
Hey, Justin. How's it going?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Hey, just looking at the recent drop in oil prices and wanted to get your thoughts about a stock such as Schlumberger, SLB.
Okay. What's your time horizon on this?
Well, I would like to catch it somewhere near the bottom and hold on to it for quite some time.
Okay. Then I don't think you're there. Do I think you're in for a short-term bottom? Relatively soon? Yes, I do. I think oil names will actually bounce here coming up. I think we're not quite ready to get into the 30s on oil, but so I think we're ready for a bounce. Probably that's more sentiment than anything else, but I do think oil is headed into the 30s eventually. And so I think you have a ways to go before SLB and a lot of the other oil names really hit their long, long-term bottom. I don't think the full adjustment of the industry has taken place in relation to all the shale production and the industry dynamics are still getting worked out. And I think you're going to have to go through a lot more bankruptcies and some major issues within that industry before the final capitulation low is in. So long term, I don't think this is the low. Short term, I think we're pretty close to it, and we could rally for a couple months, and you get a nice pop from 66.75 now. I think could it get back into the low 70s? Absolutely. Maybe even to the high 70s. But it's to me, it's not in a long-term bottom yet.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. Now, I want to touch on a topic that, or a quote that was made by Chicago Fed President Charles Evans. And basically what he says, for me, it just seems like technology keeps moving. It's disruptive. It's showing up places where probably nobody thought too much 3 years ago about Amazon merging with Whole Foods. Basically what he's saying, and what a couple other Fed presidents are starting to realize, is technology is deflationary. What a shock. They're just figuring this out. They've been wondering why inflation isn't picking up, even though they've been at 0% interest rates for so long, and they continue to go based on the Phillips curve, which is simply is about the relationship between the labor market and inflation. That's what the Phillips curve measures, and they're using the Phillips curve to measure where monetary policy should be in relation to inflation. And that model was picked up 60 years ago. Well, guess what? 30 years ago, technology started to really take off. And as soon as the internet hit, technology started to infect a lot more areas of the marketplace than I think these idiotic Fed presidents realize. And they're just starting to come up. They're starting to realize this. This is what happens when the Fed is run by monetary theorists and academics that have no real-world experience. If you actually had real-world experience, you'd understand decades ago the impacts that technology is having on inflation and the price of goods in our economy. On price discovery. When more information is out there, people discover lower and lower prices and find ways to lower prices on all types of things. And suddenly, just now, when Amazon buys Whole Foods, they're realizing that technology has been holding down inflation. Well, guess what? This has been going on for decades. This is not a new phenomenon. And these people are just realizing it? And these people are running our Federal Reserve? It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing in one way, it's shocking in another. So what do you get? You get asset price inflation, housing stocks, and you get no inflation anywhere else. I wonder why. Because they're using an outdated model and they have no real world experience. They don't understand the effects technology is having on inflation. Our time's up for the hour. Before we go, reminder, if you missed getting on Steve's schedule in San Jose last week, we'll be back up there on July 18th. To reserve your hours, go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. That's July 18th in San Jose, or you can meet Steve or myself via Skype or phone from anywhere. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. Let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.